This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to keep you connected and moving together as one.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Through the Ringer. I'm your host, Tate Frazier, and it is Friday, so you know what that means. Nora's back. Nora, great to see you.
And it's good to see you as well, Tate.
I'm fired up. I mean, we got the Spotify Wrapped. You know, they're all coming out today. Everyone's putting out their music. Before we get to our power rankings, you know we love the power rankings. I have to ask, you are our, you know, Taylor Swift expert here on the show. Pressure that Taylor Swift has to be number one on your Spotify Wrapped? I was wondering about this because if she isn't, do you think that, like, people will come after you or whatever? Like, and did it check out? Did the numbers add up for you?
It was never in doubt. Okay. Taylor Swift has been my number one Spotify Wrapped artist, I believe, since Wrapped existed. Mm. My number one song, a deep cut, hits different.
Ooh.
I will say this. I have been as high as in the top 0.5% of Taylor Swift listeners before. I believe that is my high watermark. I was in the top 2% this year, which is low for me. I think that was the first time that I was outside the top 1%. I will say, in my defense, I moved in with my boyfriend this year, so we split, like, whose music we're listening to or, like, which Spotify account we're using, and I think that hurt me. I do believe that, like, actually, I am in the top 1%. I will not let go of that, but according to my Spotify Wrapped, I fell off a little bit, not in terms of who I was listening to the most, but in my total number of minutes listening to Taylor Swift. Although part of that is because I have to podcast about her so much that, you know, it takes a lot of time off my plate. That's less listening hours. So,
and you do have a fall guy. You can't blame the boyfriend. The boyfriend is taking you away from Taylor Swift. And she has a boyfriend as well.
From Taylor Swift. He's playing Taylor Swift.
Okay.
It's just that we're still playing Taylor in our home. But we're, you know, when we're on the speakers, it might be on his Spotify instead of mine.
Oh,
if we're driving somewhere,
I get you. I get you. You're having to share. Yeah, you're sharing duties here. So it's not as much as you typically would.
We're splitting votes,
essentially. Right. I get it. Well, it makes sense. I just wanted to check out, you know, and talk about that quickly. But my number one artist was Future yet again. So shout out to the Future Hive. You know, you got to have a strong fan base.
Tough break for Russell Wilson.
I know, but you know, he's hot right now. He's hot, so my Spotify rap doesn't matter. Right now, Russell Wilson is winning the war. Let's talk about football. We brought it up. We talked about the Broncos. The other team that is hot right now in the NFL, of course, is the Philadelphia Eagles. And if we look at the Ringer's power rankings, of course, the Eagles are sitting there at 10-1. They are number one in the power rankings. We have the Chiefs there at number two, and we have the 49ers at number three. And we get a rematch this weekend of the NFC Championship game. We get a healthy Brock Purdy that's going to go out there and take on this Eagles team. Let's start there. Eagles, 49ers. Is this to decide who is number one in the Ringer power rankings? I love to ask that question first and foremost.
I do think it might be. I don't know. I'm curious if the 49ers win this game, if they would move to the number one spot. I mean, by the transitive property, you would think. But I wonder if it might sort of muck things up enough that we Ringer power rankings voters would just put the Chiefs back at the number one spot and move the Eagles down a little bit, let it be a little murky right there at the top of the NFC and therefore elevate the best AFC team to the top of the power rankings. Mm. I think that could happen. But if the Eagles win this one, I think they very thoroughly cement themselves as the top team for, I think that would be a fifth or maybe even a sixth week in a row.
Yeah. They're on a run right now. They're on a tear. And the funniest part about the Eagles, right, is that their one loss is to the New York Jets. I mean, that is the thing that I keep coming back to, that I can't believe that's the reality that we live in right now with this team and with the Ringer Power Rankings. But just in this game, I find the line is very fascinating, Nora. I mean, it's +2.5. The Eagles are playing at home. They're getting 2.5 points. A lot of people are trying to figure out what Vegas knows. But I think what Vegas knows is that this 49ers team is on a tear right now. I mean, they lost 3 games in a row. We all started questioning Brock Purdy and this team in general. They make some trades before the deadline. Now they have a pass rush. Now they're winning games by double digits. Are we buying into the 49ers again being a real contender? And is this weekend kind of the moment they can signify that to the rest of the league?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're definitely, look, the 49ers to me are among the smallest handful of teams that are not even, to me, teams that can win the Super Bowl. It's teams that seem like, if they're not favorites, they're really strong contenders. Mm. This is the best passing offense in the league. I mean, I think, you know, I don't think that they, like, threw people off the scent necessarily with that 3-game losing streak completely. They're, of course, third in our power rankings. That's a very good team. But I think you know, there's always a little bit of a lag in public perception, and they have completely rebounded from that skid with Trent Williams being healthier, with Debo in the lineup. This is just a really scary team on both sides of the ball. The trade for Chase Young, I do think, has really helped solve some problems defensively that they were having. So I think that this is an evenly matched game. I think when you look at Philadelphia, it's not even like the matchup on paper. It's a little bit more that they just find ways to win games.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the actual, you know, rosters, you go 1-53. And this is neck and neck to me.
Yeah, Lane Johnson also a question mark in this game. And, you know, it's something that, you know, a lot of people think that affected the line, him not being healthy for this game. So that'll be something to keep an eye on. We have 3 NFC teams in the top 5 of the Ringer Power Rankings. And I feel like if you talk to the casual fan, they seem to lean more towards an AFC team is going to win the Super Bowl this year. But right now, 3 of the top 5 is in the NFC. Let's talk about that third team at number 5. A team that, you know, on Thanksgiving maybe sent a message to everybody else. Dak Prescott now in the conversation for MVP. Are we buying into the Dallas Cowboys there at number 5?
Yeah, I am. I certainly think that they belong in that group of really strong Super Bowl contenders. I think Dak
number
right
2 passing offense, Nora. That's incredible. That's impressive and for Dak.
Dak to me right now is the MVP, I think. And that has something to do with just the fact that offense as a whole has been down a little bit this season. So the strength of competition in the MVP race is maybe not what it always has been. But I think he is really making the case. I think the concerns about that offense, and I will give credit to Mike McCarthy, I think they have found ways to make it a little bit less restrictive on the quarterback as the season has gone on. And it's really clicking. Now, the strength of competition has not always been there, but they have now begun what is a really tough stretch to close out the season. There are some questions about McCarthy, about this offense, about clock management, about play calling that are not going to be answered until it is the playoffs, until it is January. But they are going to be able to come as close as possible over the last month or so of the year, I think, with the strength of competition that they're going to be facing relative to the sort of cupcake schedule that they absolutely beat up on in the earlier part of the year. They did exactly what you'd want a great team to do, which is win games by, you know, by 30 points was, mm-hmm. I think, their average home victory might have been as of before their last game. But they were really demolishing bad teams at the start of the year. Obviously, the game against the 49ers, I think, gave people a lot of questions, but they've been playing great football since then. And the rest of the schedule will really test them and show us who this team is.
Yeah, we're going to learn a lot about the Dallas Cowboys very soon. One other team that's in the top five I want to hit on quickly, the Ravens. You and I have been high on the Ravens. I saw them in person against the Chargers. They have had the lead going into every fourth quarter this season. So that says something about this team. Are the wheels starting to spin on the idea that the Ravens can be a true Super Bowl team? Because even though the Chargers had a chance in that game, it does seem like fate is on their side and they end up winning these games more times than not.
Yeah, I mean, I think they absolutely are. I think the group of teams that I think could win the Super Bowl, it's this top five, and then I would throw the Dolphins in there, and I would throw Jacksonville in there too because of how Trevor Lawrence has been playing lately. But I do think that if you wanted to cut it at five, you cut it with this group, and the Ravens are the last team into that. I think the result against the Chargers probably might have been a little bit more lopsided if the Ravens were healthier in the wide receiver room. Health at this stage of the year has been a big question for this team. So there's a lot of sort of knock on wood stuff going on in Baltimore as we get to the end of the regular season. But I think, you know, the defense has been among the best, if not the best in football. I think they are a really smart game plan defense. I think one of the most impressive things about Mike McDonald, and this is going to be interesting as it relates to his candidacy for head coaching positions, is just how well he seems to understand offense. He's a defensive coordinator, a defensive coach who just really seems to understand offensive football and is able to design game plans and call plays in ways that are really smart from that perspective. And then with Lamar, they just are always going to have different things that they can do in order to score points. And
yeah, he's special.
Health is the big question mark, but I really do believe in this team.
Yeah, and the one glaring omission, if you are, you know, looking at the Ringer Power Rankings and you're buying into the hottest team, we started that at the top talking about them, but the Denver Broncos with Russell Wilson, they have won five in a row. Are we, you know, they're playing at the Texans this week. Texans -3.5. Sean Payton, he was asked about a score of Gami this week, and he was like, I don't want to bring up the 70-point game. Seems like it's in the past. Are we buying the Broncos hype? Can the Broncos really make a backdoor run into the playoffs and make some noise?
Are we buying the Broncos' impressive turnaround, or are we still having a conversation about the top five of the power rankings? Because if we are, the Denver Broncos don't belong anywhere near it.
That's fair.
I do think that what they've been able to do this season is impressive. I think it's a little bit reliant on some turnover luck, some defensive just sort of breaks and good bounces that are not necessarily going to last, but they're also not turning the ball over on offense, and they deserve credit for that. Russ has figured it out, and Sean Payton has figured it out for Russ. So I think they deserve a lot of credit, not only for just not falling apart, because it would be understandable if that team had done that after, you know, having 70 put on them and just the early results. They've really stuck together, and I think that's impressive, but I don't think that they belong in the same conversation as the five teams that we just talked about and even sort of the next tier. But they've got a good shot to make the playoffs, and the momentum that they have, definitely I could see them pulling it off.
Yeah, Russ is riding high right now. We do know that. So that's good news for all the Denver Broncos fans. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the, quote, unprecedented disaster of my Carolina Panthers. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to Through the Ringer. Still here with Nora. And Nora, you wrote a great piece on theringer.com. I did not like reading it. It hurt a little bit as someone that has watched and pulled for the Carolina Panthers for the majority of my life. But you call this an unprecedented disaster under owner David Tepper. You know, there's a lot of conversations about ownership in sports and who is the worst owner. It looks like, based on this article, David Tepper might be in that conversation. Now, let's start there. What's going on in Charlotte with David Tepper in this team?
Oh my goodness gracious. I mean, not very much that's good. I just look, Frank Reich, you know, I wrote this story that first of all, thank you very much. That's very nice of you.
Great story.
But I was writing this story about sort of what's gone wrong under Tepper as an owner. And a lot of it is tied obviously to the firing of Frank Reich, which gives Tepper now his sixth head coach in as many years of ownership, basically. It's just been a real string of knee-jerk firings there. He's fired three coaches mid-season, and I just think that type of impulsive behavior from an owner is really, really concerning in terms of the long-term stability of an organization. But I had to acknowledge, I don't think Frank Reich was doing a very good job mm-hmm. as the Panthers head coach, and I think there were a lot of things working against him, but I also don't think that he was doing much to patch some of the holes. But I also think that when you really look at it closely, it still goes back to the organizational impulsiveness and what happens when an owner does change who's in that head coaching chair so often. Because if I were to say what I think the number one thing that Frank Reich has not done a good job at this season, what I would say is that at the beginning of the year, if I listed to you the things that made me optimistic about the Panthers, about Bryce Young's tenure there, or the start to his career, one of the first things that I would have said to you is I would have said, well, I think he's going to be decently well protected. Mm-hmm. You know, you're worried about his size, but I think that offensive line is building towards something. And they've just been awful. And I think part of that is because, you know, players have been struggling, but you also have players like, you know, like Ike Ekwonu comes to mind as someone who has displayed real ability and real talent, but he's a little undersized and he's just not the type of lineman that Frank Reich, you know, like the Eagles, the Colts, those are the prototypical Frank Reich-y organizations. And those teams have big, hulking, beefy offensive lines.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you have a team that a coach who comes in and his philosophy doesn't mesh with the players. And now that happens every time you hire a new maybe not every time, but that happens most times when you hire a new head coach to run an organization. But when you do it every other year, or not even quite, then you're putting square pegs into round holes all the time. And that's a really good way to get less out of your roster than even a comparable coach would in a situation where there was just more consistency. And I don't think that David Tepper recognizes this at all. I think he's really arrogant. I think he doesn't understand the fact that, you know, the secrets to good sports ownership, from my point of view at least, are kind of twofold. And one is write some big checks. And the second one is to get out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And he's certainly more than capable of spending a lot of money. He's one of the deepest pocketed owners in the NFL. But he's just not willing to do the second part. And I think it's really hurting this franchise.
Yeah, he likes to meddle in the football decisions, which has been a conversation, you know, for many people when it comes to his time with the Panthers. And when he took over and bought this team, this is a playoff level team. This is a team that had consistently competed for the NFC South. So he took over a franchise that you would think would only be going up. And it's been going the opposite way the entire time. And the best moments have been with interim coach Steve Wilks or with Ron Rivera, who was under the old regime, right? So, I mean, that's the other tough part with this. There was one note that our producer Tucker highlighted, which I think was a great note to kind of describe the personality type that you're dealing with. But, quote, this is a man who bought the Hamptons mansion of a Goldman executive who didn't promote him just to demolish it and build a new one. He also said he would buy a restaurant and fire a waiter that was rude to him. I mean, these are some of this man takes slights very personally and he acts on them in a very, you know, violent fashion, right? So, like, that's the character that you're dealing with. Can you speak to that a little bit? Because I don't think people from the outside looking in understand just how volatile he can be at times.
Well, yeah. So I think David Tepper came into the NFL with the reputation of being this super smart finance guy who was a little bit of like a little bit of a quant. And that's accurate. Like that's objectively true. That is his background. He's done incredibly well in those fields. But I think there is this assumption or impression that he's not emotional and that he would run a team in this very analytically driven way. And he cares a lot about analytics. I think some of the decisions Reich made towards the end in terms of kicking field goals or fourth down decisions definitely contributed to his getting fired. So there are ways in which that's true. But this guy is super impulsive as a person. The fact that he, you know, relies on data and relies on sort of analytical and not emotionally driven methods in some of his work, although a lot of his philosophy as a hedge fund manager has been to go with his gut and to make sort of big bets that just feel right to him and stick it out. He's been very successful doing that, not so much as an NFL owner. Obviously, they're different tasks. But I do think that, you know, maybe Panthers fans are figuring it out. I don't think NFL fans necessarily got quite the right impression of the fact that this is a guy who has a history of being vindictive, in spots, definitely petty, definitely a little bit paranoid, and definitely someone who is capable of a real knee-jerk reaction, especially because, and this is good in a lot of ways, right? But the money does not matter to him. He has a lot more to play with than not every NFL owner, but quite a few of them. So it doesn't matter for him to say, oh, whatever, I'll pay the Reich buyout, just like I'll keep paying Matt Rhule and just turn around and do it. If something bothers him, he is just going to make that impulsive decision. And now maybe he will learn from the last 6 years and be a little bit more patient with the next guy. And maybe they'll get the hire right and he won't have that impulse in the first place. But I do think that the personality... he's a lot. He kept a pair of brass testicles on his desk he might still do that. Like, that's a very common David Tepper anecdote. This guy he's kind of a piece of work.
Yeah, to say the least. And unfortunately for him, Dan Snyder no longer owns an NFL team. So he is now going to get the focus and attention, and the conversation about worst owner is going to keep coming up. And, you know, to play devil's advocate a little bit, I understand if he, you know, decided he wanted to take Bryce Young and then feels like the coaching staff is not supporting the guy that he decided to take, and that's why he wants to move on. Maybe, you know, that's the reason why. But the good news for all the Bryce Young fans like myself is that one game was against CJ Stroud. So head to head, Nora, I don't see that put out there a lot, you know, 1-0 against CJ Stroud.
That's true. So
Bryce Young knows when to step up. That's what we like to see. Speaking of quarterbacks, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Aaron Rodgers. Yep, we're doing it again.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner, to learn more. Baseball is something else.
All right, welcome back to Through the Ringer. Still here with Nora, and every week we have stories that are wacky, wonky, crazy in the NFL, and we go to Nora and we say, Nora, please make sense of this or debunk this or do, you know, put your magic on this and let us know what's actually going on. The headline this week, as we know, Aaron Rodgers is cleared to practice. The 21-day window is open. This, of course, is 11 weeks after he had surgery on his Achilles tendon. We have talked about why he is trying to put this out there. There's a lot of conspiracy theories. These are things that Aaron Rodgers likes to live in. What are your thoughts when you see the headline that Aaron Rodgers is about to practice again on an NFL field?
Well, I mean, I guess not much, in the sense that I don't quite think this is as big of a deal as it seems like it is, because Aaron Rodgers has said a couple things about his return. One is that in order for him to come back and play, to make a, you know, miraculous, to complete this miraculous recovery timeline, he needs to be healthy enough to do it. But he's also said that the Jets need to be alive in terms of playoff contention. And they are still technically alive. However, I believe most models have the Jets currently with a less than 1% chance to make the playoffs. So they are effectively out of it.
So you're saying there's a chance, though, like at least if Aaron Rodgers, you know what I mean? Like he could be that 1% chance. He could be the 1%.
Well, but could he? Because if he started playing right away, then maybe he would be able to do it. But here's the thing. Rodgers is going to practice, but he's not cleared for contact. He's going to be, you know, going through what I imagine is kind of the Russell Wilson, like, manifestation pregame ritual. He might do a little bit of that on the sideline. He might crack some jokes with Nathaniel Hackett. They might toss a couple Austin Powers references back and forth. But he's going to be a really limited participant in practice, at least according to how Robert Saleh made it sound. And so good for him for getting himself to a point where he can, you know, throw a football on air. But we have no evidence that he's doing anything meaningful in terms of simulating what actual NFL gameplay is like. And look, it wouldn't be the most unlike Aaron Rodgers to do this. Maybe to kind of just be around the team, try to put some pressure on Zach Wilson or Tim Boyle or whoever it is at this point to try to pull it together. Maybe see if they can creep back into the conversation somehow. But I also don't think that it would be beyond Aaron Rodgers to do this just so that he can sort of say, I completed the comeback. You know, suck it, doctors. I made it happen, but we weren't alive. So I just wasn't able to come back. And then he would actually come back for minicamp, which is like exactly the standard timeline for Achilles recovery. So that would just... I don't know. It seems a little too perfect to me.
Yeah, which is what we have talked about since this all started to come out. Aaron Rodgers has the perfect, you know, out, so to speak, because he can say we weren't in playoff contention. I was ready to rock. I was ready to roll. I was ready to get out there. I defied all of these doctors who have been lying to all of you this entire time. I mean, it is exactly what he would want. I mean, it is so perfectly set up for Aaron Rodgers, and the PR machine continues to churn out these stories. And I need to see that videotape, Nora. You know, the tape that he apparently sent to the Jets. And they were all wild, you know, they were mouth agape at the idea of Aaron Rodgers at this stage. I need that video. And if I see that video, maybe I buy into the hype a little bit more. But it seems all a little bit ridiculous, to say the least. But that's the Aaron Rodgers saga so far in New York with the Jets. Nora, where can we find all your amazing work where you talk about the NFL and beyond here at The Ringer?
TheRinger.com, The Ringer NFL Show feed, Dual Love Threat it. With Stephen Ruiz twice a week. And at home, listening to Taylor Swift.
I love it. I love it so much. Nora, thanks so much for being on the show, and we will see you next week. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Tate.
This episode is brought to you by Lincoln and the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid. featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God. The world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.
Welcome back to Through the Ringer. Joining us now, you've seen him on the show before, and you've seen him all over the Ringer universe and beyond. Waz, what's going on, man? Great to see you.
I'm good. Happy to be back on, brother.
Yeah, I wish I was in the studio with you. We had some car trouble today that we're dealing with, but we're making things work here on Through the Ringer. You know what it is. We got to make things happen, and we got to talk about the NBA in-season tournament, because there is a lot of conversation about this. People are excited. You know, a lot of people talked about the courts originally, but I feel like we've gotten past that at this point. But we got to talk about some of the best teams in the NBA right now, and one of them is the number one seed in the Western Conference, and we have to go to Minnesota to talk about this team. The Timberwolves right now are contenders, to say the least. They're plus 3,000 to win the NBA Finals. Anthony Edwards plus 2,600 to win MVP this season. Let's start there. How do we feel about the Timberwolves? Are we believing? Do we believe the hype so far?
I do. I have to believe the hype because they're getting it done on the defensive end primarily, right? And they have the talent to do so. And also, the guys who aren't we don't necessarily think of them as these defensive minded kind of players, even a Carl Towns, the effort that he's given on a night-to-night basis on a defensive end, whatever message they gave him going into the season has gotten through. Obviously, Rudy is a generational defensive player, and Edwards takes defense very seriously. It's just up and down the roster. It's just been incredible to see the team unity on that side of the ball.
Yeah, and a lot of people were talking about the offense, right? When they talk about the Pacers have been setting trends as this offensive juggernaut, but they're not talking about the defense of the Timberwolves. And to be quite frank, McDaniels and Edwards are probably the two best perimeter defenders that Gobert has ever had around him and to surround him. And right now, when you have those two guys, I joke that it reminds me of Jordan and Pippen, like the young version of them with Anthony Edwards and McDaniels. But do you see that? Am I crazy, or is that too much hyperbole?
No, I absolutely agree with you, especially with Jaden McDaniels, because he, outside of Rudy, has, going back to last year, been a legitimate all-NBA defensive level of player. He takes his matchups so personally on a night-to-night basis when he's guarding one-on-one, but even as a help defender, he's shown himself to be pretty valuable. The Jordan and Pippen comparisons make sense. Obviously, Mike won a Defensive Player of the Year award. Scotty, his whole career was known as an all-time great defender. Obviously, that's a gold standard, a platinum standard. But for today's NBA, as far as wing defenders are concerned, they're at the top of my list of any duo that we have in the NBA.
And if you have a team that wants to contend in the NBA right now, you need a big who can guard Jokic. So they have that box checked by having Gobert on their team. And a lot of people obviously made comments and made jokes and made snide remarks last year about that trade. But right now it's looking like, it's something to kind of keep an eye on, to say the least. And you got a guy there now running the team who came from Denver, the NBA champion. So he knows the makeup of that roster and that team. So there's a lot of gamesmanship ahead between the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Denver Nuggets. Let's go to the Eastern Conference. Let's talk about the hottest team in the NBA. Everybody is talking about the Orlando Magic. We even had a Miami Heat moment where, Jalen Suggs and Cole Anthony pulled a Dwayne Wade and LeBron James. What are your thoughts on the Magic and, this 8-game win streak they got going right now?
I hate to sound like a broken record, but again, it's defense. But these guys are doing it differently than Minnesota in the sense that top to bottom, they have all of these rangy, long, athletic, active wing guys. And they are just, they're all over the place with an amoeba-like defense. Sometimes you might see five guys helping into the paint and then immediately, closing out hard on shooters. Like, the average NBA team doesn't have the personnel to put those kinds of possessions together, right? Where you are you know, stifling rim attacks and not giving up open threes simultaneously. Like, that's kind of the holy grail of NBA defenses. And I think it starts at the point of attack with Jalen Suggs, honestly. He's been a high effort point of attack sort of guard defender, even going back to his rookie year. But this year, he's become even more disruptive. He's helping out on the boards. He's just been incredible. And to sort of buttress that elite level defense that he's given them, he's finally making a shot. He can finally put the ball in the damn ocean, which is nice, which has got to be heartening for them. Even the rookie, Tony Black, has been incredible on the defensive end as a rookie, which is something you don't see all the time. And this is, again, before we even get into Paolo, before we even get into France, these guys have buy-in on the defensive end. And so, yeah, I think you got to give credit to the coach and the front office for the way they've assembled the team and coached up the young guys.
It did feel like when they, you know, brought in the young guys, you know, even a perfect example of this, right? They draft Cole Anthony 15th, the first round pick. The next year, they take Jalen Suggs. These guys, you know, in theory would play the same position. It did feel like they were almost competing with each other more so than competing with teams they played in the NBA. And now, you know, you fast forward, you know, a year and some change later, they're throwing alley-oops to each other. They're best friends with each other. It does feel like this team, like the economy of shots and the roles have been defined. And when I see that happen, I immediately go to the coach and I go to Jamal Mosley. Is he one of those guys that, you know, are we talking about him enough as the coach of the year candidate front runner right now?
Yeah, I don't think he's gotten a lot of attention. One, he's just a pretty low profile guy to begin with. And then two, let's face it, the Orlando Magic, Orlando, not exactly the mecca of NBA basketball, right?
Right?
It's not some huge media market as well. And so everything they do has been kind of under the radar, but it'd be hard to argue against it. I think people like my partner, Justin Verrier, have had a sick obsession and fascination with this team, as well as other NBA Twitter hipsters, have been on the Magic for a while, going back to last year. But I don't think anybody foresaw them, you know, sort of leapfrogging into the top four or top of the conference this year. And so it's been a pleasant surprise. And generally, Coach of the Year goes to the team where we thought you were going to suck and you're better than we thought. And I think Orlando qualifies for that.
Yeah, the hipsters are going to be upset about our next conversation point, because we're going to talk about the two best teams actually in the Eastern Conference. We're going to talk about the Philadelphia 76ers and the Boston Celtics right now. That series is tied at 1-1 on the season. They are going to play each other tonight. So this would be the rubber match between these two teams. Right now, if you were to kind of decide who is the better of these two teams in the Eastern Conference, are you buying in on the Boston Celtics? I know that's the company man answer right now. Or are you buying in on the Philadelphia 76ers?
Well, I would say the team that's put together the better resume thus far is the Boston Celtics. Mm-hmm. Just on both ends of the floor, they've looked like a pretty well-rounded, well-balanced team. Not a lot of easy weaknesses to attack, again, on either end of the floor. Good rim protection, good perimeter attacking on defense. And then on offense, obviously, they've been super committed to this five out stuff, and so long as Derek White has been on the floor, they have just looked incredible, because he's the one guy who's been able to supplement all the one-on-one scoring with some level of ball handling, connecting, playmaking on that end of the floor. Obviously, Maxi, I've been calling him Max Me all season long. He was smart to turn down the deal that they offered him. His play has been indicative of somebody who is going to get a max contract this offseason, going to make an NBA All-Star team, might even make an All-NBA team if, you know, the chips fall in the right way. And so Philly's been a great story to start the season, and Maxi has been, you know, basically the shining light of this thing. Embiid is playing at an MVP level again. I think the thing about somebody like Embiid, who's been in the MVP conversation over and over, it becomes this thing where it's like, all right, just show me in the playoffs, right? And that's not to say he hasn't been great. It's just that the Maxi thing has just been off the charts and been such a pleasant surprise. But as far as who's been the more well-rounded, who's put the best tape on the floor this season, it'd be hard to argue against the Boston Celtics at this point.
Yeah, I think that was the right answer there. Well, the next one we have Denver at Phoenix, which is both these teams have not played each other yet this season. Devin Booker, Michael Pina, our guy, wrote a story about him being the best point guard in the NBA. There's some Halliburton hipsters out there who would be upset about, you know, that designation, but we'll leave that be for the time being. But Denver at Phoenix, what do we expect in this game? Do we think that Nurkic versus Jokic, obviously both these guys used to be in Denver with each other. Is there any sort of gamesmanship going on there? Do we buy into the hype that Phoenix can kind of upset the champs tonight?
Look, Denver's going to be playing on a back-to-back. They waxed the Houston Rockets last night at home in a game that I watched every single minute of, and they basically cruised to that victory. I don't think it's going to be, you know, too much of a slog for them. The Rockets never really challenged them. I think they'll be fresh for tonight. And I think Denver is one of those teams, they play up to their competition. And having played Phoenix in the second round of last year's playoffs, they're going to want to send a message to these guys. Jamal Murray finally came back from that hamstring aggravation that he had, and he looked pretty good himself last night. I just think when the Nuggets are at full strength and they're taking their opponents seriously, I find it hard to believe that they'll actually lose. And so, yeah, I like what Phoenix has done. They've been able to right the ship, even despite all these crazy injuries up and down the roster, especially to Bradley Beal, who was supposed to be their key acquisition in the offseason. But, yeah, I think Denver is going to kick their butts tonight.
Yeah, we see Jokic kind of take it up a level at times. He's a very smart player, very savvy
guy. And he loves playing against those Balkan boys. You know, mm-hmm. He just loves when he gets to go up against the Eastern Bloc, a fellow Eastern Bloc native. It's kind of funny to see, honestly.
He feels like he's playing FIBA basketball again, and he almost, exactly. You know, he just takes it up and plays for his national country at some level. Yeah, there you go. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the struggling Golden State Warriors and the in-season tournament. Welcome back to Through the Ringer. Still here with Waz, and we're talking NBA basketball as we like to do here at the Ringer. And let's start with the team that we've been talking about for over a decade at this point, and that, of course, is the Golden State Warriors, once light years ahead of everybody else in the NBA. And right now, they have lost 8 of their last 10 games. What is the how do we remedy this situation, Waz? Like, what is the answer for the Golden State Warriors right now?
There's only two answers. Either the guys that are in-house play better. I'm looking at you, Klay Thompson. I'm looking at you, Andrew Wiggins. Or right. They make a deal to bring in to upgrade the talent. Because Steph is still playing at an insanely high level. He's right there with his peak levels. In fact, when you watch the game, so much so that teams are diverting extra resources to try to stop him. He still attracts a ton of attention, but behind that, he's just not getting the level of production that he needs. Andrew Wiggins has been the most disheartening, especially because it seems like his effort has waxed and waned throughout the course of the season. Every now and again, especially recently, he's looked like he's been a little bit more reinvigorated, but even still, sometimes a shot, and I'm talking about great shots, wide open shots, haven't really been falling. Klay Thompson, he just looks bad. I think the contract dispute has gotten to him. It seems to be affecting his play. He's just not playing the way that we would expect him to play. Even we're not talking about pre-injury Klay Thompson here, right? We're talking about, you know, 2022 playoffs version of Klay Thompson. You know, that guy was a very valuable piece, made huge shots when they needed him to. He just hasn't met that level. And now, you compound that, the Chris Paul injury is looking pretty serious, and so is the Gary Payton II injury. And so their role guys who have been actually playing well are now, you know, going to have to take some time off. So it's looking pretty dire over there in Golden State right now.
Yeah, and Andrew Wiggins was the second best player on the team when they won that championship in 2022. Easily. I think a lot of people forget that that was the case. So they need Wiggins to come back and be in that form at some level. Last year, a lot of off the court stuff kept him from being on the court. So there's just a lot going on there with the Golden State Warriors and a lot to figure out. And if you're Mike Dunleavy, I mean, he was left with a very difficult job. Bob Myers said, sayonara, I'll see you guys later. Good luck with the Clay contract. Good luck with trying to piece together this team in the late stages of the Splash Brothers era. So tough to be a Warriors fan right now, but if we know anything about Steph Curry, it's like as soon as everybody seems to be off them, right, and you start getting Barkley talking about, you know, this guy's going to be delivering me Uber Eats in a couple months, right, as soon as those quotes start coming out, it's like it gives fuel to the fire for this Golden State team, and they come back better than ever. So I wouldn't write them off just yet. Let's talk about the play-in tourney, because the quarterfinals start on Monday, December 4th, and we got the odds in front of us. The favorites, of course, the Boston Celtics at +310. You got the Bucks there at +350. Are we reading into anything here that the Eastern Conference has the top two favorites in the in-season tournament?
I mean, those are what most people would consider the two best teams, right? Mm-hmm. The Pacers, as nice as their season has been, nobody thinks they're of the caliber of those two teams. The Lakers have been very up and down. The Pelicans, I mean, come on. You know, they've been a roller coaster themselves. I think that's correct to see the Bucks and the Celtics as the class of that playing group. I think the games, however, individually are going to be fantastic. But if I were a betting man, those would probably be my two picks right there as far as favorites to come out on top in this thing.
Have you been a fan of the tournament? I mean, I've seen a lot of people. There's like the reality that we live in, the world that we live in. Then there's the Twitter conversations that happen. The Twitter conversations are saying that the tournament is a rave success. Give Adam Silver his flowers. You know, let's bend the knee. This is the best thing to happen to basketball. Do we think that the general fan has been watching and keeping up with this tournament? And do you think it actually has made some waves in that sense?
I think there's only been a marginal increase in ratings for the in-season tournament games and the regular games, but it's a brand new thing. You have to bring people into the product, right? And I think the first step of that is delivering a compelling basketball, like actually competitive games, guys going really hard in these games. And once you can sell that to people, Tate, then I think people will come. Like, people just needed to be convinced that the players themselves were taking these games seriously. And there's no way you can, even if you're the biggest in-season tournament skeptic, you can't deny that they've played hard and taken this seriously. And if you are a fan of basketball, then you're going to be a fan of the best players in the world trying their hardest to win games.
Yeah, one of those guys that was, you know, playing more minutes and playing great basketball, all NBA level basketball from my vantage point, is De'Aaron Fox with the Sacramento Kings. The Kings are right there at +490. They have the third best odds to win the in-season tournament. Is this a moment where this Sacramento Kings team can kind of send a message to the rest of the NBA that we're a real true contender? Last year was no fluke. You know, we are actually going to be here and we're going to take that next step.
Absolutely. I think not only are they a really talented bunch, I think they have a game-breaking centerpiece in De'Aaron Fox. I think back in the days, there was a lot of questions about, is he like a fringe all-star kind of guy? Is he really the man to sort of carry a team? What is he like in the clutch? Can he ever make a mid-ranger? Nowadays, those questions are silenced. Mm-hmm. His jump shot is for real and nobody can stay in front of him. And the guy plays with a motor and is hyper competitive. And that's what I like about this group. They're just a super competitive group. We saw that in the last group stage game against Golden State where they go down big early at home and they just fight back. And at no point did you think that group was going to give up. And so they play together. They're very talented. They're very hungry. There's no way you should be sleeping on the Sacramento Kings in the in-season tournament.
Yeah, my three most, the three most American young players that I want to protect at all costs right now. Anthony Edwards, of course, De'Aaron Fox right there, number two, right neck and neck with him, and Zion Williamson. Okay. Those three guys, we need to protect them at all costs and make sure that they're playing FIBA basketball for the sake of USA basketball. We'll see what happens with that. I do have a fun question for you, Waz. If the Knicks were to, they're obviously, like, you know, we got all conversations about the Knicks all the time, but if they were to win the in-season tournament, do we think that they hang a banner, like, next to the Billy Joel banner in Madison Square Garden? Like, is this, or even the Lakers, like, what if the Lakers win? Do they hang a banner next to the actual NBA championship banners? Like, do we get in that mud and do we make that happen?
So the Lakers, I don't know, because they have an actual history of hanging banners of actual things of importance, like championships. Mm-hmm. So I don't know about the Lakers, but the Knicks, who have literally won nothing forever, I don't see why they wouldn't. And I think their fans would actually be super into it. Because to be honest, if you talk to any Knicks fan right now, they're very happy about the sustained competence that they've had for the last three seasons, right? And so this would just be another, you know, feather in that cap of like, wow, we have a real NBA team. We're competitive every single night. We went out to Las Vegas in games that were hyper-competitive against teams that have serious aspirations, and we came out on top. That would absolutely be something to celebrate. And I think the rabid Knicks fan base would be more than happy to do that.
Yeah, we saw them after they won that one playoff game when Derrick Rose had 27 points celebrate like they won the NBA championship. So I think they would hang that banner. I think that's a fair point. Will you be in Las Vegas? Will you be there for the in-season tournament?
Yes, I will be there for the semifinals and the finals. I'm really excited to be at the very first version of this. I'll be able to tell my grandkids that I was there, you know, when Aaron Nesmith made his first basket of the in-season tournament.
Oh, I love when history happens right before our very eyes, Waz. I can't believe it's actually happening. Waz, thanks so much for coming to the show. Where can we find all your amazing work here at The Ringer?
Of course, check us out, The Ringer NBA Show, wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, and all the other podcast platforms. And then, everything else is at theringer.com.
Yeah, theringer.com, a great place to go. We appreciate everyone tuning in. This has been Through the Ringer. We will see you next Tuesday with Cousin Sal. Thanks, everybody.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.